This is NBC Nightly News with Lester Holt.
President Trump spent this day with the world's economic and political elite at the World Economic Forum in Davos, Switzerland. Chief White House correspondent Hallie Jackson is traveling with the president and tonight reports there may be a breakthrough in the immigration negotiations here at home.
Instead of deals in Davos, it's a deal back home at the center of attention with new immigration details tonight ahead of a deadline to protect those so-called dreamers, undocumented immigrants brought to the U.S. when they were young. NBC News has learned from senior White House officials the president would back a plan that gives a path to citizenship to 1.8 million of those dreamers, not just people protected under the current program, DACA, but also those who are eligible but never registered. That's a shift and one the White House frames as a concession. The president also wants roughly $25 billion for a border wall, another $5 billion for more border security, an end to the visa lottery system, and a limit on family-based migration so immigrants could only sponsor spouses and children for citizenship, not parents or siblings. President Trump talking with CNBC today.
I will consider that a great achievement to solve the DACA problem. It's been out there for a long time. These are good people. These are people that should be able to stay in this country.
It's that possibility of a path to citizenship in particular that may anger the president's conservative base, but it might help broker a deal in Congress, with the White House hoping for a vote the week of February 6th. Chief of Staff John Kelly managing negotiations back in Washington, with the president overseas in this Swiss ski town more posh than populist.
Today's been a very exciting day, a very great day. And great for our country.
The president who ran railing against the global elite is now surrounding himself with them at his Davos debut, rubbing elbows and throwing some. Alongside Israel's prime minister, President Trump threatening to strip Palestinians of tens of millions of dollars in U.S. aid.
That money's not going to them unless they sit down and negotiate peace.
And in a speech tomorrow here in Switzerland, a senior White House official tells me the president will hammer home a message he's been delivering in Davos that the U.S. is open for business. Lester?
Hallie Jackson tonight. Hallie, thank you. In Colorado this evening, an urgent manhunt is underway for two men wanted in the shooting death of a 32-year-old sheriff's deputy. A third suspect is under arrest. And authorities tonight are warning the public outside of Denver that the suspect still on the loose may be armed and dangerous. NBC News national correspondent Miguel Almaguer has the latest.
The reports of shots fired quickly followed by officer down. Adams County Sheriff's Deputy Heath Gum killed in the line of duty while chasing three suspects. The man who police say fired the fatal shot taken into custody, but two others escaped. Massive manhunt is now underway.
This is an active investigation and crime scene, and we are still searching for potentially armed and dangerous suspects.
With a swarm of officers shutting down schools and locking down neighborhoods near Denver, the dragnet is yielding few leads as police mourn a brother in blue. An early morning procession through the streets of Thornton, Colorado. Law enforcement alongside the public standing in the frigid cold, paying tribute to the 31-year-old husband and family man gunned down on duty.
They're like a family. They come and support each other and everything. And I think if we acted like a family, maybe this wouldn't happen.
Tonight, heartbreak and a search for the two men that might have answers as a fallen deputy is honored by the community he served and protected. Miguel Almaguer, NBC News.
The nation's deadly flu epidemic appears to have claimed the life of yet another child, this time in Florida. Some schools there are shutting tomorrow to try to stop the spread. This latest tragedy is raising a question a lot of parents are asking. Does your child have a cold or potentially the deadly flu? And how can you tell the difference? NBC News medical correspondent Dr. John Torres has the answers you need in this flu emergency.
In the growing number of young people dying this flu season, there's now another. Florida 7th grader Dylan Winnick.
We used to walk home from school every day. To think that my little brother, I'm never going to see him again, it's unexplainable.
His heartbroken family, stunned by just how quickly he died at home.
His temperature was 98 degrees, and then within just a couple of hours, they found him. And he had already passed. That's why you can't understand how that happened.
His parents thought his sniffles and exhaustion meant he had a cold, but now they believe it was the flu. So how can you tell the difference between a bad cold and the flu? Stuffy nose and cough could be either. Severe body aches that come on quickly and nausea, a sign of the flu. As are vomiting and diarrhea, though mostly in children. A high fever above 101 degrees usually means the flu, but not always.
She's had the flu, okay.
This brutal flu season has a lot of people on edge.
We do have an ambulance on the way.
Near Dallas at MedStar Mobile Health, ambulance calls for flu symptoms are 10 times higher than usual.
So what kind of symptoms are you having?
Nausea, body aches, hot body but chills.
One more warning for parents. If your child seems to get better, but then suddenly gets worse,
you mind if I take a listen?
Take them to the hospital right away. Dr. John Torres, NBC News, Dallas.
Some important information there. Now back to the question we've been asking, will she or won't she? After a frenzy of speculation in recent weeks, we're finally hearing again from Oprah Winfrey herself on whether she may run for president. NBC News White House correspondent Kristen Welker with more now on what Oprah had to say.
Like Oprah Winfrey all but closing the door on a potential presidential bid. The famed star telling In Style magazine, it's not something that interests me. I don't have the DNA for it. And acknowledging she's getting a lot of pressure to take on President Trump, speaking to In Style 3 weeks before this moment at the Golden Globes.
The new day is on the horizon.
Calls for an Oprah candidacy have only grown louder. Hashtag Oprah 2020 trending for days. The president himself weighing in.
Oprah would be a lot of fun.
A recent poll shows the president trailing Oprah 51-42%, a TV titan who many Democrats believe could be a strong challenger to take on the former reality TV president. But publicly, Oprah has been clear. She's not interested, telling Stephen Colbert last year.
Is there any chance she'll run for office?
Never!
Really?
Never. No.
Still, in the world of politics, there's always time to change your mind.
So you will not run for president or vice president in 2008?
I will not.
Will you ever run for president again? Yes or no?
No.
And it was Oprah who asked Donald Trump back in 1998 whether he would ever throw his hat into the ring.
Probably not.
So will Oprah keep the door closed? I met with someone the other day who said that they would help me with a campaign, she told In Style. That's not for me, at least not for now. Kristen Welker, NBC News, Washington.
All right, let's turn now to this country's devastating opioid epidemic and our exclusive interview with the new head of the Food and Drug Administration. Well, there's no shortage of blame to go around, including drug companies and doctors. Some now say the FDA could have and should have done more to stop it from becoming a national crisis. Here's NBC's Cynthia McFadden with our One Nation Overdosed report.
The impact of the opioid epidemic is stunning, with 300,000 American deaths since the year 2000. Tonight, listen to what critics are saying about the FDA's role.
Absolutely criminal.
I think this may be the best example in history of a regulatory agency failure leading to a public health catastrophe.
Dr. Scott Gottlieb inherited the problem, appointed by President Trump as the new head of the FDA.
I think that this is one of the biggest public health crises facing this country.
Ever?
Ever.
Could the FDA have stopped this?
Well, I don't know that we could have stopped it. I think a lot of people didn't do what they needed to do in the past, or we wouldn't be in the situation we're in right now.
Watchdogs point to a timeline of missed opportunities to rein in the crisis, starting with the approval of OxyContin in 1995. By 2013, with opioids ravaging the country, the FDA approved another powerful opioid called Zohydro. Over the objections of a panel of experts who voted 11-2 against it. The epidemic has hit West Virginia particularly hard.
One little community of 300, 400 people had 9 million pills coming into it.
Senator Joe Manchin spent more than a year lobbying the FDA to put limits on prescription opioids like Vicodin.
I go up and I testify before their advisory committee. Boom, should have been a slam dunk, right?
But it wasn't. Between the FDA and the DEA, it took nearly 2 years for the change to go into effect. Once it did, a billion fewer pills were prescribed. Dr. Gottlieb says more aggressive action is now needed.
I think prescribing patterns absolutely have to change. So you really should see most patients getting, you know, a 2 or 3 or 4 day prescription, not a 30-day prescription.
He's pushing for more doctor training and non-opioid alternatives to treat pain.
But it will take us a year, maybe two, to get to the optimal place here.
When I hear you say a year or more, that's a lot more people becoming addicted and a lot more people dying.
Yeah, there's a lot of things that we're doing in the interim. I don't want to be looking back 5 years from now and say, I wish I had done more.
Since Dr. Gottlieb took over, one opioid, Opana, has been taken off the market after FDA concerns about the drug's risk of abuse. Lester?
Cynthia McFadden in New York. Thank you. Tonight, residents in Paris are bracing for what some fear may be the flood of the century. The city is on alert for potential record flooding after days of heavy rain. Some parts of the city are already underwater in places where the River Seine burst its banks. Out of precaution, the famed Louvre Museum has partially closed down. A lot more to tell you about here this evening. Still ahead, cheap airline tickets, why those lower-cost basic economy seats may not be such a bargain after all. Also, the famous face you won't be seeing at this year's Oscars. Hope you can stay with us. We're back now with news for anybody who flies. United Airlines says it plans to add more cheaper basic economy fares to compete with the lowest cost carriers. But NBC News has obtained a new congressional report warning many travelers are confused by basic economy and they often end up paying far more than they expected. NBC's Tom Costello, who covers aviation for us, tells us more.
Ask any airline, they'll tell you the cheapest tickets sell best, and basic economy is cheap, with the biggest airlines trying hard to compete against low-cost carriers.
I have a spot on the flight, and it costs significantly less.
I am saving money. I'm saving money, yes, by no doubt.
Basic economy usually means boarding last, no assigned seat, sometimes paying for an overhead bag, and no guaranteed family seating. Now, NBC News has obtained this congressional report, which suggests basic economy fares tend to confuse airline travelers, who often end up digging deeper into their pockets once they get to the ticket counter.
They're entitled to make a good profit. I just want the traveling public to know exactly what they're getting.
Example, Chicago to Denver, round trip February 2nd, $192 in economy, $152 in basic economy. That carry-on bag and a pre-assigned seat will cost $40 more.
It's really almost like consumer beware now when you're buying your airline ticket because you think you're getting a deal, but in the end, it's not such a big deal.
In a statement, the nation's airlines tell NBC basic economy is a completely optional service that enables airlines to meet their customers' needs at a price point that works for their budget.
The advice for anybody booking spring break tickets, buy economy tickets so the family can sit together and read the fine print so you know what that airfare includes. Tom Costello, NBC News, Washington.
Still to come here tonight, those who serve, a soldier's best friend saved on the battlefield and now with a real home. The rare and beautiful scenes on the Mississippi River. American bald eagles as we've never seen them. You can count one famous name out of this year's Academy Awards. Last year's Best Actor winner, Casey Affleck, has reportedly backed out of the ceremony. Traditionally, the reigning Best Actor presents the award for Best Actress. But amid the Me Too movement, Affleck has come under new scrutiny. He was sued for sexual harassment by two women in 2010. Both settled out of court. Affleck has denied the allegations. The symbolic doomsday clock was moved forward today by 30 seconds to just 2 minutes before midnight. The group of atomic scientists who announce every year how close they think we might be to the apocalypse cited nuclear tensions with North Korea, rising tensions between Russia and the West, and the threat from climate change. And something a bit more calming, a rare sight of the Mississippi River. American bald eagles, our national symbol, floating downriver in Illinois. The video was captured by a nature enthusiast. The video has been viewed more than 2 million times, and it's not hard to see why. When we come back, the long-awaited reunion between a soldier and his best friend from the battlefield. Those Who Serve is next. Finally tonight from our series, Those Who Serve, a story of companionship and loyalty on the battlefield. The soldier's creed is to leave no man behind. But for the servicemen you're about to meet, that means man's best friend, too. As a U.S. military combat medic, Joe, who asks us not to reveal his last name, saved many lives serving in the Middle East. But last year, he found himself saving the life of a one-month-old puppy named Annabelle.
When I first met Annabelle, she was at a house right by me, and her sister were, they were rescued after their mom stepped on an IED, and she was killed.
Joe brought the frail pup back to the base, feeding her from his own rations, sleeping next to her.
She brought a whole new dynamic to our team. We had, you know, someone to love and someone to take care of, which was nice.
When it was time for Joe to go home, he called his wife.
And I was like, hey, Jillian, do you think that we could adopt a dog?
It was definitely just a natural thing to say, yes, bring her home. If you can, bring her home.
What'd you do today, dude?
5 months after Joe's homecoming to Raleigh, North Carolina, his family got the news. Annabelle was on her way, thanks to SPCA International, which reunites soldiers and dogs.
She's been through a lot. I hope that she thinks it's worth it.
After a road trip that took them through 16 checkpoints, part of a journey that spanned 5 countries, Annabelle finally made it.
I think I see her, dude. Annabelle.
Joe's son, 3-year-old Weston, meeting his new buddy for the first time. This 4-legged orphan of war, now safe with her new family, thanks to the serviceman who came to her rescue.
A touching homecoming for a man and dog who both serve this country. We appreciate you spending part of your evening with us. That is Nightly News for this Thursday night. I'm Lester Holt. For all of us at NBC News, thank you for watching and good night.